Coming up next, we're talking with Conservation Officer Sarah Grell on the Friday Morning Show.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you had something else to say John.
I'm speechless.
Sarah Grell joins us now in the studio. Sarah, thank you for being here. We really appreciate it. It's good to see you again.
Where you been?
Hi. I don't know what that was, but it was entertaining. I'm not sure that it was.
Yes.
It makes me giggle. I'm good. I've been really, really good, actually.
So I think for those of us who don't hunt, we don't realize, like, you hear about the opener for deer hunting, firearms opener.
Yeah.
But you don't realize how much hunting is going on right now, how many things you could actually be hunting for.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are going on right now. In fact, we have some trapping seasons that'll open up tomorrow. We have a bear season that closes on Sunday.
Okay.
So that'll end that, but we've got all sorts of things that are open. There's duck hunting, there's small game hunting, so anything you can kind of think of under the sun as far as small game hunting goes in this area, really. And we'll have archery deer seasons opening right now. Firearms deer opens November 4th. We've got openers that happen the third weekend in October as well. Or right beforehand, and that's the other trapping seasons. Like, we have beaver trapping season that opens up, and the main trapping season I think that a lot of people look forward to is that Fisher and Pine Marten season, and that doesn't open up until later in November. But there's just a ton of things that are happening, and not just that, there's folks that are out enjoying their time four-wheeling still this time of year. There's people that are out walking and recreating, so yeah, it's a great, wonderful, beautiful time to be outside.
So let's backtrack. Bear season.
Yeah.
How many bear are like harvested? You might not know that. I mean,
I don't know that yet. They'll come out with a pretty concrete total here after the season closes, so that then they know how many people have registered and harvested and everything.
There's bears
that have already been harvested in the first couple. I really have no idea what the numbers are, but usually the first couple weeks is when the bear harvest is the highest throughout the entire season, and that's when bears are coming to the baits. You know, they're maybe not as wised up to that, and that's when hunters are hitting it hard. The other thing is hunters in the woods, when they're bear hunting, they don't have to compete or contend with other hunters until like small game opener happens. So that's another reason why that first couple weeks is pretty crucial for bear hunters to get out, and also while most of the bears are actually harvested during that time.
Because
I don't know if there's been a report yet as far as
that
goes.
Okay,
I haven't seen anything.
You just don't see bear a lot, like, you know, and I'm just wondering if there's ever a time when you don't have a bear season because there are not a lot of bears.
Well, and that's just it. There's a difference between seeing them and them being there. And so bears, being that they're so nocturnal, if we didn't actually allow bear baiting for bear hunting, we probably would never really harvest any bears in the state, because they are nocturnal. That's how they work. That's when they hunt. That's when they like to do that. They're not, and that's when they do a lot of their eating. However, that's not always true in the cases of when we get nuisance calls. This year for bear nuisance calls has been the highest call volume I've ever taken in the county since I've been a game warden in this area. And in fact, since I've been a game warden, period, and I've worked in the Duluth area, St. Louis County, and I've also worked in Cambridge, which is Isani County area, and, you know, more central Minnesota. I've never taken as many calls as I did this year, just a lot of nuisance bear calls. And so to me, just based on that alone, and I'm not a biologist, we have a healthy, very healthy bear population. In fact, just took a couple nuisance calls even just yesterday and the day before that on a barren area. And not so much nuisance, but more like sightings, like, hey, we saw this bear in this area and concerned about some things. It's been really high this year for calls.
Hmm.
So what happens when someone calls in a bear nuisance thing, how do you deal with it?
Well, it depends on what they're reporting as the nuisance. But I'll give you kind of the example of my typical phone call would be that somebody calls in and they've reported that their bird feeders have been damaged or have been taken down, or there's garbage that's strewn about. And when a bear gets into your garbage, it's different than a raccoon getting into your garbage. Raccoons are going to do the same thing typically that a bear does, but on a way lower level. you know, way level, lower level as far as a scale goes. A bear is going to take, tip over that garbage can, take like whole bags of garbage and rip them apart and drag them into the woods. So you'll have garbage kind of like all over your yard.
Right. So I had a raccoon. That helps me. Okay. Not a bear. Okay, I wondered about that. Thank you.
And either way, you don't want critters in your garbage. But so what they'll do is they'll call reporting stuff like that. And the first thing that we always tell folks is to remove any of the food sources, which includes the garbage. So if you can store your garbage in your cans, inside your garage, inside a shed, someplace where a bear can't get to them, then we recommend that before you set it out for garbage pickup. And then put it out right before garbage pickup is going to happen. If you don't have garbage pickup, then we recommend that you go to the dump frequently or get rid of your trash that way. But of course, storing it inside so it's not outside anymore. I store my garbage cans in my garage, and it's not always the most pleasant of smelling times in the middle of the summer, but it keeps the critters out in a way. The other thing, too, is with the bird feeders, I tell folks to take them down and remove all the seed for at least 3 to 4 weeks. And especially when you're living
Wait a minute. No. At a certain period of time, or I don't understand what you mean.
Oh,
like if they've called in a bear nuisance.
Oh, I see.
If they've called in a
that's what my brother did.
Nuisance.
And it worked.
Take them down for 3 to 4 weeks. And I always tell folks, too, that if you have neighbors, if they're feeding and they don't know that you have had a problem with a bear and they're still feeding, not bears, but they're feeding, you know, birds or whatever, if they don't know about the problem, then that bear then could transfer over to their place. And now here you are trying to remove your seed for 3 to 4 weeks or your food sources. And they're not, and so that bear could potentially be in the area longer than 3 to 4 weeks. So I always tell folks it's a good idea to talk to your neighbors too and kind of see if they can be on board and do the same thing. Now, of course, they don't have to. You don't have to remove that stuff, but if you don't, you're going to have a bear problem, and it's going to continue to be an issue. So removing all the food sources for at least 3 to 4 weeks. If it's been a bear that you've done this with before and a couple months later it comes back, you know, consider removing it for longer periods of time. Birds are going to come back. They're going to come back and eat. You know, they're not going to completely leave the area, and you know, you'll always get to see those. So removing those and then reporting it to us is something that we like to keep track of. We have something that got enacted now this last summer as far as law where we can get in touch with a nuisance bear hunter or a bear hunter and see if they would be willing to take a nuisance bear out of an area before season, but they have to work through us or through the wildlife managers here at the DNR. So there's some other options if need be. We like to stay away from any type of the lethal options because, of course, you know, that bear isn't knowingly trying to harass you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So they're taking the easy way out. They're taking that free
lunch.
Absolutely,
and we would do the same thing.
Yeah. Yep.
So it seems like there's still a lot of leaves on the trees. How is grouse hunting going?
You know, the reports that I've heard from hunters have not been great.
Not good, huh?
I've kicked up some grouse when I've been walking. So I've seen a fair number, but not probably what I would like to see. And from what I'm hearing, not the greatest. But we've had a lot of leaves still up. They are getting, this last week, they've gotten knocked down a ton. Yeah. With that frost, they just basically, a lot of them fell off leaves or fell off the trees. So with those disappearing, that should definitely get better. I'm not hearing real good reports of that. I'm seeing and hearing better reports of people and folks running into deer. I think our deer population is pretty healthy. So I think we'll hopefully have a pretty good firearms deer season. This area has gone back to a hunter's choice area. This is area 179, permit area 179. So it's gone back to a hunter's choice area. And then north of us, which is also an area I patrol, then is a lottery area. So, you know, and you got to know what you can take and where you can take and what permit area you're hunting. For example, I typically hunt up in kind of the Ore area. And when I get an opportunity, if I get an opportunity to firearms deer hunt, that's where I go. And we are the only area up there. I think it's area, 119. That's a bucks only area in the state. So I was like, well, that's fine because that's what we try to harvest anyways. But yeah, otherwise, a lot of those permit areas in the state have changed and they've increased opportunities to get does, for example, because I think our deer population's pretty healthy.
It's Sarah Grell. She's a conservation officer in the Grand Rapids area. Now, I often think of you as part of your job is probably just to deal with some real boneheads out in the woods or things
sometimes,
that are going on. So let's have a little story time. What are some of the things you end up having to deal with?
I was thinking about that.
Yeah, you got
to
let us have a couple boneheads.
I have some interesting stories, I guess, too. You know, so it depends on what vault I want to dig in first.
Right.
Yeah.
You know. But a couple of things that I was thinking of more along the lines of safety. It's some bonehead, irritating type stories. And it would be when I get the reports of people tinkering or messing with other people's stands.
Oh.
And on public property. And now I've had all sorts of calls where people have taken the ladder stand, so now the person can't climb up into their stand anymore. I've had stories where people have built like platform type stands out of wood, so they're permanent, they're not removable. And I've had stories of where people have sawed the steps, and so you can't tell. I mean, how dangerous is that? Isn't that just
well, isn't that like junior high stuff?
I think so, yeah. But you know that
might as well put banana peels on it every step.
Right, except you could see that.
Yeah,
you
know, I suppose.
So that wouldn't be, oh, you know, see,
yeah.
Keep it undetectable.
I'm a bonehead, yeah.
But stuff like that, and I got to thinking about that, you know, the safety aspect behind that, you know, to want to hurt somebody because you don't like where their stand is, or because they're maybe it's too close to yours or whatever. And not everybody is out there intentionally trying to ruin somebody else's hunt. Yes, that does happen. But yeah. So I think if people could just kind of get along in the woods and maybe be adult-like and behave, you know, like adults, that would be good. But yeah, that's one of the kind of the bonehead things that I can think of too.
I think that's a minor bonehead. Can we get a more serious bonehead, or is it something
I'm the one who brought up bonehead first. Let's right. not use maybe that often anymore, but word. Yeah.
Well, are you good at seeing guilt? Seriously, as over
trained.
Time,
yeah.
Have you been trained to know what guilt looks like?
Yeah, I do.
Hand gestures, eyes.
Let me give
what?
You an example. So I was assisting. Yeah, it's all of that. I was assisting an officer on an interview last night, and I can't use names really or details because it's an ongoing case.
Of course,
but. Assisting an officer last night with an interview, and I'll tell you another one too, because recently this has been happening to me. But the question had come up of, you know, I want to ask you about this. And the individual said, yeah, this is what I did. I did that. I have this over here, and I have this in my, you know, my freezer without giving out too much, and this is where I did it, and gave out all the information. And the officer and I just looked at each other and were like, deer in the headlights look. Like, we don't expect somebody to just give you the info. You usually have to pull it out of them, or at least they lie the first time, you know?
Yeah.
And so we were both like, there's got to be something else going on.
He's
here. Like, what are we
us.
Missing, you know?
Right.
But the individual was just really honest, and, you know, this is why I did it, and this is what I did, and honesty goes a very long way with us. But to talk about a different case now, and this one isn't ongoing. It's been resolved. But had an individual throw a bunch of garbage out on public property, and you see this, you know, you see this with deer carcasses, that kind of thing. But this was like household garbage, dumped it, got rid of it. And in my first talk with the individual, my first interview was like, nope, don't know how it got there. I'm not sure. You know, I brought it to the dump. I don't know how it got there. And I was like, really, though? Really? Because I don't think you did.
Did you find like their name in the garbage? How did
super,
you?
Yeah, and it was. There's more to it than that. But that's what kind of led to it. But it wasn't. It actually wasn't the people's garbage who dumped it. It was somebody else that did it. But anyways, but in this interview, and just kind of to give you an idea of what happens, is the avoiding eye contact, the being really evasive, the giving like very specific details about the incident as far as this is what I actually did with it, you know, saying this is what I did with it, but lying about it and saying I brought it here, this is what happened, and giving like real time kind of stuff, almost too much facts, you know, to a point where I was like, this just doesn't add up. And then turning around later, and I went to go talk to the person again about it, because I was like, well, I went to interview the guy at the dump. I talked to him. He was like, no, he was here, but, you know, nothing ever got dumped. Okay. So I go back to talk to him, and he's like, yeah, I did it.
Oh.
I was like, okay. Like, I was just expecting a little bit more. And I'm not telling people out there that that's what we want.
No.
Yeah, we don't want confrontation. We don't want physical confrontation or fights or anything like that. We definitely, I'm not saying that. But it was almost like, okay, you know, like, if everybody was like that, mm-hmm. we probably wouldn't throw the book at them all the time. And I think when somebody's honest with me, I tend to think about what kind of breaks I can help them out with or give sure. them in whatever violations or things that I encounter them doing, versus the person that just lies and lies and lies and lies.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the ones that own up to it will do it again? Do you think?
Yeah, I think it depends on what it is.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'll do another specific thing like what I caught them for, but they might repeat something okay. else. And some of that is ignorance. Some of that is just, you know, just not knowing. Not knowing what the rules are, not knowing what the laws are. And I would have to say there's a lot of citations that I write that come out from out of just not knowing what okay. the law was and really not taking the time to probably learn it. And then there's the other citations that you deal with that are just they're naughty.
Yeah.
You know, the other people that you deal with are
how
are
serious
naughty
do you take garbage? I mean, if this guy was a jerk and I mean, what kind of fine can you do for doing garbage?
Well, it's a
dumping or
yeah, it can be a really littering. Big deal. There's kind of a couple different options that we can go with. One is a criminal citation. It's a criminal charge for littering. And that will get you right around the like $182 fine kind of deal. Another one, another way to go, which I like to do this one, is a civil fine. And though it doesn't sound like it holds as much weight to it, the monetary value that they would be responsible for can really, really increase, and it can be up to $2,000.
Nice. Good.
Now, depending on, there's those signs that you see on the road that littering, you can have up to a $7,000 fine. Yeah, you can have up to a $7,000 fine for that type of littering. For the type of littering that I was dealing with, the criminal charge for the monetary value involved in it is not very much. And in fact, for the amount of garbage that was dumped was just a hair over the price of what it would have cost to dump the garbage. Okay. So it and there was a lot of it. But to then go to like a civil fine, for example, it's like, well, then I could do that. And it also doesn't go then on the person's record. So that's a good way of looking at it. But what it boils down to is you can charge per square foot of garbage.
Oh, okay. Oh.
So that adds a monetary value on it. So I think it's like $20 per square foot. So then when you're dealing with the really big, huge black bags full of garbage yeah. and you've got a large amount of them, I mean, that total can creep up to $2,000 pretty quick. So,
wow. Well, we've covered the gamut.
Yeah. So yeah. Before we go, just a couple tips for safety out there as people are out hunting or walking in the woods.
Orange.
Okay. There we go. That's it.
Wear your orange. Wear yeah. your orange. You legally have to, you know, okay. when you're hunting, small game and big game. But when you're out walking, I just ran into this the other day. There was an individual walking on the side of a county road and wearing orange. And I like to see that because they're visible not only to me as I'm a driver, but also visible to anybody that's in the woods and stuff. So.
But that's not required, is it?
It's like not if required. I was to go,
it's
no,
just smart.
It's just smart. Okay. Yep, yeah. Smart. Yeah, but not required. You don't have to do that unless you're engaged in hunting activity and the hunting activity requires you to do so. Because, like, archery hunters don't have to wear blaze orange.
Okay. So. Gosh, Sarah, thanks a lot.
Yeah, come by more often.
I will.
All right.
Where you been?
Let us know if you want to weigh in on this conversation. Send us an email, comments@kaxe.org. Come